Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, Jackie Cation here. Welcome to the Dork Forest. It's November or December of 2022. You're about to listen to the Dork Forest. My name is Jackie Cation. The website's, of course, jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you enjoy a determiner. Anyway, November and December, I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest, that instead you donate to your local food bank, because it's a nice holiday kind of wintery thing to do. And if you don't know where your local food bank is, you can go to feedingamerica.org, or you can Google the words that are your town's name and the word food bank. Hey, sarcasm. JackieCation.com is where everything is linked. Like if you go to dorkforest.com, you can see all the notes and it'll link you to the YouTube videos for the Dork Forest and the and Apple podcasts, and it's on Stitcher. It's on all the things. Anyway, so JackieCation.com will link you to everything. Dork Forest will link you back to JackieCation.com and to everything else. There is merch. If you have some sort of holiday wish to purchase a Dork Forest t-shirt, the logo is now on a black shirt with the logo in that bright green that the Ranger t-shirt used to be. Sold out of the Ranger shirts, discontinued. Also, I have some stand-up shirts that are squish t-shirts. If you wanted a Meat Shield t-shirt, I have limited sizes left, but that's still a benefit for to help immigrants and anti-racism stuff. So if you want, go look around JackieCation.com store for your store needs. I also have a new album out that's playing almost nowhere. That's right, because of legal issues with something called Spoken Giants. Very disappointing. So the special itself is on YouTube, on the 800-pound gorilla YouTube channel, linkable off of JackieCation.com. You could also get a DVD or a CD at JackieCation.com. The CD itself is listenable at places where you can buy it. So at Apple iTunes and at Amazon Music. You could also stream it there. If you buy it, I make more money. But if you want to stream it, do whatever you want. But it's not on Pandora. It's not on Spotify. It's not on Sirius XM. And neither are my four other albums. But do whatever you want because it's your life. There we go. What else is happening? I'm touring. I'm doing a lot of stand-up on the road. Feel free to come. Feel free to sign up for the email list at JackieCation.com. Harder to get on because you got to find how you put it in then to get off, which is you scroll and hit unsubscribe. But all of these things are available on JackieCation.com. I'm coming to do stand-up probably near you, if not near you, near someone you love. Tell them. Anyway, let's dork out about something. Let's get into the show.
Jackie Cation. Not in my garage. This is my bedroom. This is where the magic happens, if magic happens at all. It would be here in my bedroom. You're listening to the Dork Forest, of course, and I have Kurt Braunohler, who I don't know the last time you were on. It's got to be 10 years. It's got to be...
It was probably 10 years ago. It was at your house.
Yep, it was at the house, and then I think we did my podcast, and we did your podcast at the time, which was blindfold a person and bring them somewhere weird. What was it called?
It was called Get Lost. It was part of the K-hole. Yeah.
It was so compelling. It was compelling because you brought me somewhere and it did not take longer than 20 minutes. It felt like we were in the Central Valley. It felt like we had driven 2.5 hours towards Modesto.
It was a strange place. It was like a place where it was like in the back of a high school, I believe.
It was a college. Yeah.
And it was like these monuments that were built by some lunatic in like the 1890s or something.
It was the 1940s and he wanted you did too many episodes. I've only done the one.
Yeah.
So it's like when somebody tells me about their Dork Forest, they know more about it, but I remember it because it was spooky as all fuck.
Yes.
It was different posed statues of cowboys and ladies. And because the guy tried to hire somebody to make a Wild West thing outside his motel in Los Angeles in the after World War II. They worked one day and he was like, I could do this. And then he made these things, which couldn't have been spookier.
They were horrifying. Like, everyone looked like they were melting.
There was just, the proportions were off. Their expressions were disturbing. They were lurking. It was never, it felt genuinely dangerous. Like, if someone had a magic powder dust to make those alive, they were all murderers. It was grim. So, but Kurt Braunohler is going to be talking about your current dorkdom, which is, let's tell everybody, though, that you have a new special that's out now on perfectlystupid.com, because it's called Perfectly Stupid, and it's the stand-up comedy with the bit in it. You're on,
and you can watch it kind of like everywhere. It's available on Amazon and Google Play, and starting December 16th, it'll be on YouTube.
There we go. And you may know Kurt from Bob's Burgers and other work on the television with the moving pictures, but now we're going to talk about surfing, and it's at Kurt Braunohler, which is Braunohler. No, O-H-L-E-R.
O-H-L-E-R.
Braunohler.
You can just Google Kurt B. Comedy.
Best of luck out there. I believe in all of you. Rangers, you got this.
I also own Kurt B. Comedy.
Oh, good.
.com. Let's see. Do I own Kurt B. Comedy?
Are you asking series or you're just rhetorical?
I'm just putting it in.
I love it.
Yes, I do own Kurt B. Comedy.com. So just go there.
Go there.
And you can watch my special right there.
It's all happening, you guys.
It's all happening.
You can go to PetAncestry.com, and that is JackieCation.com, because it's funny. Now, but KurtBComedy.com is Kurt's thing. Surfing, I need to know. I just need to know more, is what I'm saying. I had my first question always with all athletic events that take place away from your home.
Yes.
Where do you park?
It just depends on the break. It depends on the break, Jackie.
What's a break? Is that where the wave is? Is that where the wave is? Where the wave
is
being kept?
That is the beach. Oh. That is the beach that where a good surfable wave occurs.
Oh, cool.
And so really it depends. It's like one of the places I surf is called County Line. It's like, you know, it's supposedly in between Ventura and Los Angeles County, but it's really just in Ventura County.
Oh.
And that is, you just park along the side of the PCH and the beach is right there.
Okay.
But then there's other breaks where you park and then walk for a very long time to get to them. Like Trestles down south, you'll walk it's probably 15, 20 minute walk through like a little protected area, which is very gorgeous. And then you get to this like world-class series of breaks right there.
And always, because I am not an athlete, I like to say, is there a golf cart you could buy? Is there some sort of... You're holding a surfboard, correct?
Yes. In Orange County, it has become a rash, almost a problematic rash of people with e-bikes. So they have e-bikes with surfboard racks on them.
Okay.
And then they just zoom along that little road to the beach and then lock their bike up and go surfing, which is honestly, if I lived anywhere near Trestles, I would do.
You would
all
probably
the time.
Do it as well.
Of course I would.
Right. Because if it's a quarter of a mile you know, you're hauling, you're already sweaty.
I think it's straight up like a mile.
Oh, full on. Full on 1 mile. That's a long way. So. And how heavy is it? The different surfboards are different weights, right?
Yes, 100%. If you got a shortboard, you know, probably like, you know, a little potato chip shortboard, it can be super, super light.
Right.
But I have some pretty heavy, boards.
What kind of board is it that you mostly use?
That I mostly use? It goes back and forth. All my boards are right here.
Oh.
There's many, many, many,
Please
many.
Please tune
many
into
of
the
them.
YouTube so that you can see a row of boards.
And I honestly started surfing this high performance longboard that I was given by a friend. A friend just texted me and he's like, "Hey, my brother bought a surfboard and broke his leg. He can't use it. It's at my mom's office and she needs to move her office. Do you want it?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I went and got it, and it's fucking beautiful, very user-friendly, easy longboard to surf. But I have everything from a 9-6 like nose rider all the way down to like a 6'4" short board, but all of my boards are slightly longer than average because I'm a taller, bigger than average person.
It's true. You are a very tall person. So the longboard that you said that it's kind of easy to use. Is there a good starter board? Let's say hypothetically, Jackie Cation wanted to get into surfing.
Yes.
Okay.
So there is an argument about this in the surf world about which board is the easiest to like learn on, because it used to be something called a fun board, which was like in between a short board and a long board. But the argument for a fun board is that it has all the disadvantages of a short board and all the disadvantages of a long board with none of the advantages of either. And so I always think like a nine foot long board is probably the easiest to learn to surf on. But if you go to like Hawaii or something like that, and you go to Waikiki Beach and they, you know, take a surf class, they're going to put you on like a 10 foot ultra wide, super stable board so that they can push you in and you can like take your time to like wobble up and stand.
Oh, right. Cause you want it to be kind of wide so that you aren't constantly falling off.
And especially if you're like, you want to stand up and see what surfing is like, then that's it. Those boards are not very maneuverable. They're gigantic. They're just made for going straight.
Okay.
Right.
But you stand up on it if you're lucky and go in.
And then you just go towards the beach and then it stops.
And you are done. Right. Because otherwise you move your body and you can ride. I've seen video is what I'm saying.
You've seen videos. Yeah. So you actually, when you surf, you actually go parallel to the beach for most breaks.
Okay.
So you're riding sideways along the wave as it breaks. So there's a face to the wave and it's breaking behind you and you're riding the part that still hasn't broken in front of you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, it does look amazing. So, and how long have you been doing it?
I started surfing. My mom bought me my first surfboard when I was, I believe, 12 or 13. And it was, raised by a single mom. And we always went to the beach together.
Right.
And
because it's free.
I was always, because it's free. And I was always boogie boarding.
Right.
And so she bought me a single fin 70s short board that I have no idea what happened to it.
Okay.
I wish I still had that board because it's a board that like people would love to have right now because there's this big kind of resurgence of retro shapes that people are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a wide point forward single fin short board. And that's what I learned on. And it was just wonderful. And when I got it, I don't know if they were using it as a table or if they just didn't know, but they had put candle wax all over the top of it.
Okay.
And because you wax the front of your surf, the place where you stand so that it's grippy, you put wax on it.
Okay.
And so someone just, I think, didn't understand that and was using candle wax. It was very confusing.
Right.
So I had to like sit for hours and scrape all of this candle wax off of this board. And then that was my first board. And that's how I learned. Literally learned by just going out. And it took me probably 2 years to learn.
Oh, I bet. Just
in New Jersey. In New Jersey.
And you're in New Jersey.
Yes.
In on the ocean, on the Atlantic Ocean?
On the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay. All right. Well,
look, it has a whole coast. Goes down the whole length of New Jersey.
They got waves. The moon affects the Atlantic Ocean as well, Jackie. And so you just for two. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that, what you just said, because this is something that I do want to talk about, because people always talk about, like, they think that the moon makes waves.
Yeah.
And they don't. The moon has nothing to do with waves. The moon controls tides.
Okay.
And so tides you can imagine as almost like a gentle tilting of like a bathtub. So more water kind of gathers on one side.
Yeah.
And then more water kind of gathers on another side. And that has nothing to do with waves. That's literally just how much water volume is in one area at a time.
Right.
Because the moon is, the gravitational pull is pulling at certain parts of the earth. And then as the moon comes around, it pulls at other parts. So the water goes back and forth. Waves are generated by wind over large stretches of water called fetch. And so what you're actually riding was, for the most part, especially in the Pacific Ocean, formed by a storm thousands and thousands of miles away. So it's just a lot of energy in the wind that's blowing over large stretches of water. And eventually that energy gets transferred to the water.
Okay.
And it makes just like this beautiful sine wave in the water. And then a deep open water wave or swell travels. And as it kind of like progresses and it lengthens,
yeah,
it deepens in the water so that only just the teeny, teeny, tippy, tippy part of the top of the sine wave is above the water. Because being above the water is a very inefficient way for energy to travel through water.
Right.
So most of it is like 100 feet under the water, the majority of the energy. And okay. So it's like this big, long, stretched out, very deep sine wave of energy. And it's essentially that the ocean is like a battery then, really. It's storing this energy. And this energy is traveling, you know, in all the directions that the wind had been blowing over that length of water,
right,
which is called fetch again. And so then as the wind energy in the ocean starts to feel, quote unquote, feel the bottom, meaning that the length of the sine wave, the depth of the water becomes less than the actual length of the sine wave.
Okay.
It starts pushing it up,
yeah,
out of the water. So it starts to steepen. And then friction starts to happen on the bottom of the sine wave.
Okay.
So then the bottom of the wave starts going slower than the top of the wave. And when you hit a certain critical point, that means that the wave crests and breaks because it can no longer maintain that sine wave because of the pull, the friction on the bottom of the sine wave.
Oh, and that's... Okay, go ahead.
That's when the wave breaks.
And yes, it's because it gets more shallow and the land sort of comes up and interferes with the wave.
Yeah, so okay. it kind of pulls on the bottom part of that sine wave, you know. And they've shown that energy travels through water the same way light travels. The wave is very similar.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. What I was thinking of is when I used to do North Dakota a lot, you would drive through the highways of North Dakota and there's nothing. There's nothing there. There's no mountains. There's no trees.
Yeah.
There's corn and there's some buildings. But if in the winter it gets so windy,
uh-huh,
that it
yes.
will, and it doesn't feel, it feels like it came from like Wyoming or Colorado, and it just comes and it feels like it could literally just cut you in half just because of that force. And so when it hits trees or when it hits, you know, then it breaks the sign, I guess. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's exactly what's happening
in
the Pacific Ocean.
But,
you know, imagine that 10,000 times because there's literally no thing in all directions in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Right. And it can go down as very far before it hits any kind of land or structures at all, whether it's coral or fishes or whatever.
Yeah.
This is a separate question, but does that create those streamline things like that fish migrate on? Does it create those columns?
The jet streams?
Yeah, like a jet stream. Yeah.
I have no idea. No, the currents in the ocean, I do not know. I think the currents in the ocean are created by the Earth's rotation, and I could be wrong about that.
Okay. I thought waves were created by the moon. So
most people do, but people always say that and they're just like, oh, well, you know, it's high tide. That means the waves are good or whatever. And it's like, no, actually, usually high tide is a very bad time for waves at most breaks.
Okay.
Because you've got more water
that's
close to land, meaning that the waves are feeling the bottom later. And therefore, they're just crashing right directly onto the beach as opposed to when it's lower tide or mid tide. There's less water volume, so you start feeling it farther out and has a chance for that to be like a good rideable wave.
So how do you know when to go surfing because of that wind?
So there's models.
There's people telling you.
100%.
Like, right.
Yeah. There's you usually, you know, subscribe to a surf forecast or you can look at buoys. So they have buoys in the ocean. They have buoys all over the place and the buoys measure wind and swell direction. And if you kind of like, because when I used to live in New York City and it would be a hour and a half long train ride to go surf in Rockaway.
Wow.
I became very adept at predicting what the swell would be doing based on buoy readings, because for West Coast, the people at Surfline and Magic Seaweed, these are all like, you know, surf forecast places. They have all of the people live here and they focus all of their energy on making better and better models for the West Coast. And on the East Coast, nobody gives a shit. Right. And so, you have to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and so I would, we would make predictions based on buoy readings farther out. So as you, the buoy hits like a place that's 200 miles out, you know that based on what the, what's called the wave period, the period is how the time in between the peaks of the sine wave of the okay. energy. So the longer the period, the faster that wave is moving.
And are you looking for a tall wave when you surf or a fast wave? Or, I mean, ideally both or whatever.
So fast swells turn into tall waves.
Okay.
So if you have like a period of like 14 seconds, that's going to be a pretty fast wave. It could maybe be a foot tall, but at 14 seconds, that will stand up to probably like 3 or 4 feet, depending on the break.
Okay.
And also there will be long, what's called a lull. So there'll be a long period of time in between sets. So when a set comes, you have like a couple waves that are just getting small. They start small and then bigger, bigger, bigger. You have your set wave, maybe one or two
yep.
that are the biggest wave of that set. And then they get smaller and smaller again because they travel in packs. It's all about efficiency of movement of energy. And so the swells tend to gather together in these kind of these swell packs, and then they move through the energy with more efficiency that way. In the same way that like when bicyclists, they ride in that like Peloton and they get right behind each other to cut down on the
Tokyo
on the
drift
wind movement.
Yeah.
And Tokyo drift.
Drafting yeah, exactly. or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 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 So the waves are actually like drafting with each other, and that's why they come in like sets.
Okay. And, yeah. And can you, and you obviously aspire to ride the one that rises the highest.
It really depends. It really depends on what your goal is as a surfer, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I think surfing is much more, on the artistic side of a physical activity.
Okay. Well, cause I was going to say, is there different kinds of surfing? Like there's different kinds of skateboarding. Like some people yes. go into the half pipe. Other people like to grind it out on the
freestyle
bars and yeah, all that
yeah.
stuff. Is that also done in surfing?
Yes, there is. People who, you know, the primary version of surfing that's out there and that the kids love is a shortboard shortboard. And doing, you know, like the holy grail is to do an air, you know, to like literally go fly into the air. I have never really been interested in that style of surfing. I'm much more interested in kind of a what used to be called soul surfing.
I tend to prefer
longer boards. You're looking for trim and speed and gracefulness, kind of big, slow, long turns, but working with the hardware of the board becomes part of the joy of it, as opposed to just making this short board do everything your body wants it to do.
Okay. So yeah. So the short board tends to be more tricks and stuff like that too, right?
Yes. And also, and we're going to get into fin placement. I mean,
let's
this is why
it.
It's a dorkdom.
That's it.
The shortboard is always a thruster fin setup, which means it's three fins, two on the side and then one behind it.
Okay.
And the thruster setup was invented in the 80s. Before then, you just had single fins, and then people started using twin fins. But then the thruster was the, it could kind of, you could do the most radical maneuvers and it would hold in much larger waves and give you a lot of control. What you lose with it is that it's three fins, and three fins is a lot of fins. It's a lot of drag in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way a thruster generates speed is by turning. So it'll use the center fin and then the outside fin or the inside fin as you turn to kind of like rocket water in between those two fins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you generate your speed. And so you're constantly doing big, big turns and hitting the lip and just over and over again. So if you see like modern surf competition, it's just people hitting the lip, coming down, hitting the lip, coming down, hitting the lip, coming down.
Yeah.
And very rarely big back turns or anything like that. Whereas with a single fin, which is what I primarily surf, a single fin is much faster in the water because there's just simply less drag that goes onto it.
Okay.
Because it's just one fin as opposed to three.
Yeah.
And it has speed out of the gate. so that right when you hop up, it takes off, as opposed to on a thruster, you have to hop up and generate your speed by turning.
Oh, sort of like a swing set. When you're on the swing, you have to sort of build up.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But with water and stationary, different. But yes, I get it. Wow.
And then what about a twin fin, you're asking?
Well, I am asking that as I looked at I have a small list of questions. Anyway, but uh-huh. what is the twin fin? Like if there's only two.
So the twin fin is it essentially operates like a little rocket. So the water comes in and kind of gets almost pressurized in between these two fins and shoots out the back. And so it's a very, very fast setup, but it can feel what people call squirrely, meaning it's kind of it's very loosey goosey when you're surfing.
A little tippy.
Yeah, a little like almost like a short skateboard feels.
Oh, okay.
In big tall surf, you tend to pop out of the wave if it gets too steep, and that is the reason they were having a problem with twinnies. But now people ride twins, like an old school fish style twins, which actually has keels instead of fins, and keels are just much larger versions of the fins and they're usually glassed on. And that's a really fun board to ride, but usually in smaller surf because it generates speed quickly.
Okay. So you and your one fin long board,
yes.
you get to go fast and you get to make sort of larger wider turns.
Yes. They're usually slower turns and wider turns, but you know, more graceful. Also, you can walk the nose on a longboard. So you actually physically walk on the board up to the top. The goal being obviously to hang five or hang 10. Five means five toes off the front of the board.
Okay.
Hang 10 is all 10 toes off the front of the board.
I never knew that was what that meant. The hanging of toes. It's okay. Good for the toe talk. Welcome to toe talk.
Welcome to toe talk. But there's also what I surf, what was my go-to board, which comes all the way back to your first question. My go-to board for a very long time was what was called a displacement hull. Which was invented when they were kind of transitioning from longboards into shortboards. And so they were looking for a way to cut length, but kind of maintain speed and maneuverability. And so the displacement hull actually has almost like a belly on the bottom of it, which most surfboards are flat, or they have a V in them, or they have a concave to them.
Okay.
This has like a belly, almost like the
like a boat
hull.
Yeah.
Like a boat. Like a displacement hull sailboat. And so you actually cut through the water. The board sits a little lower in the water, and you're actually cutting through the water, kind of shooting it out on either sides, literally displacing the water. And what it's good for is good for going from rail to rail, meaning taking it from kind of like leaning backwards against the wave to then leaning forward against the wave with the rail. But the rail is buried in the water for the most part. The rails are the sides of the surfboard.
Okay. Wow. This is
That's a weird, it's a weird shape. It's a very specific and crazy feeling to ride a hull, but they are very fast.
Okay. And so you're a child, you live in New York for many, many years. You're taking a subway with your surfboard.
I had a bungalow.
Okay.
I had a bungalow, so I...
Oh, you could store things at the beach.
Yeah. So I figured out, I surfed my whole childhood. And then when I was 18, went to college in Baltimore, just didn't surf for 4 years. And then moved to New York City after that. And just did not surf. And it was not part of my life in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know if I even thought about it, really. But I was always, like, loved surfing. And then I think when I was, like, 24 or so, I realized, oh, there's surf. Like, Rockaway has surf, and there's a surfing beach. And so we went down, like, checked out. I was like, oh, I could totally surf here. So I got a bungalow, I think, in 2002. In 2002, I got a bungalow. and for just for the summer with a bunch of friends, and everybody, of course, people are like, yeah, this is a quarter block from the beach. And it was like 90, I think 80 bucks per month for each of us. So that had 10 people in there, and it was like $800 a month for this bungalow. And then I made some friends on a surf message board called nynjsurf.com.
Right.
And we were in very big nerds who were just like wanting to surf all the time, but stuck at work. So we would just talk about surfing on this message board.
Sure.
And I remember thinking it was a summertime rental. And so September was coming up. We were supposed to give up the rental. And my buddy Will was just like, you know, I bet we could find 8 other surfers to fill this and just keep it year round.
Yeah.
And I was like, where are we gonna find 8 other surfers? And I just didn't believe we could do it.
Right.
And then, of course we did find it very easily.
The message board and
yes,
it helped
and
out.
I think actually the first 2 months we kind of Will had to pay extra to like keep us afloat.
Right.
And then, but then it was full, and then it was that we just gave it up. I left New York in 2012, so I was in there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it is 2022, so we had it for 20, that group of surfers had it for 20 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
They just, the guy who owns it, his daughter was moving back home, so he kicked all the surfers out and was renovating it for her. But for 20, the thing that, the bungalow I started originally was there for 20 years with 10 surfers at all times.
Right. And for 10 years, you just kept your essentially equipment in that bubble.
All my boards, all my my wetsuits. And, you know, we would surf in the winter in New York City. So, you know, big 5mm hooded wetsuits with like 7mm, you know, lobster claw gloves and booties.
Right. Because it's freezing. And I mean, it's very cold.
It's usually
cold
the water
the
would
summer,
be.
Right.
And no, in the summer it warms up much more than the West Coast.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so the West Coast, the water in Southern California, the water stays cold because of the fact of that Gulf Stream. I'm not saying Gulf Stream, I think, is air. But the currents, the ocean currents, pull water down from Alaska constantly.
Okay.
And so it has this big circle. So they come slowly down. They're very, very cold. They start to warm up around Mexico, and then they turn around, and then they shoot back up in the middle of the ocean. Back
and they
to
never
Alaska
truly
get
warm.
Cold again,
and they never get as warm as East Coast.
And the Atlantic Ocean literally just bakes and bakes and bakes as it gets hot, and the water kind of all stays there. But you still have upwelling, which happens, which is if you'll notice if anybody's ever gone to the beach and one day the water's like nice, and then the next day it's fucking freezing. What happens is, wind blows over that top layer of water and pushes it away. And what replaces it is upwelling, cold water from deep below, pulled up to the surface.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden the water is fucking freezing.
And how
so that would always happen.
Yeah. And so how often were you, I mean, how often do you surf now, traditionally, the last 20 years? Like, is it once a week? Is it 5 times a week?
Yeah, when I was in 2002, I was probably surfing as much as I possibly could. So hopefully I would be surfing once a week.
Okay.
But also on the East Coast, it really just depends on conditions. So you're always like waiting. And the best conditions were always in the wintertime. Like fall and spring were really good. But then the wintertime, I don't know, always the best. I had like maybe 3 or 4 years in a row where the best swell was on Valentine's Day. And 2 of those 3 years were snowstorms. And so we're all surfing in the snow with these like amazing waves.
Do you have photos of that? Did anybody?
I have a video of me surfing
in the
a
snow.
Double overhead wave in the snow in 2004.
That is a delight.
It's the biggest wave I've ever ridden.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
So that means double overhead means
like
a 12-foot wave. So it's like when you see me on the face of the wave, there's like another additional me of wave above me.
Oh, that sounds terrifying. But super fun. Once you get your balance and get your sense of where your feet are, where your body is on that board and where that board is in the water, that's how that's how you can know how to like. At a much lower level, you guys. I like to play hacky sack.
Yeah.
And when you play hacky sack, you kick behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly just hope, right?
Yes.
Long time, it's just, I hope I connect. And but you can hear it. And if you play often enough, you're like, I kind of know where that's going to be. And you kick it, and then all of a sudden it's back in front of you. And so, but it's all about, and with Hacky Sack, you always have to touch the ground in between every kick if possible, because it re-centers your gravity.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So even if it's just, you know, you bring your foot up and kick with the side of your foot.
Yeah.
If you go back down, touch and kick it again. Touch, kick it again, touch, kick it again.
Oh,
and
interesting.
It can bring your numbers up, is what I'm saying. If you're a counter.
Bring your numbers up.
Right.
The old hacky sack.
If you're doing hacky sack counting. Yes. And so.
But it's all that lizard brain stuff, right?
Yeah. Right. And instinct, it's all instinct, and it's amazing. So what about here on the West Coast? Do you get to surf once a week?
So I do not get to surf once a week. And I think I'm struggling right now. And that's why I was kind of wanted to talk about it. It's just, you know, I have two kids now, and they're, my youngest is three.
Okay.
And so we're out of like the, you know, infant child stage.
Yep.
But
you can't
still
take a 3-year-old to the beach and go, I'll be right back.
No, not at all. And so I'm just, part of me wants to say I'm very busy as a parent and as a comic, and I haven't had enough time.
By the way, before you finish that sentence, let me tell people that they can see Perfectly Stupid, which is Kurt Brownoller's new special on Amazon and YouTube and Amazon, all the streaming right now. And on December 16th, it'll be on YouTube. But if you go to perfectlystupid.com or kurtbcomedy.com,
then you can find out the links to everywhere.
Right. And so
I'm going to your home club actually on Thursday too.
Little Acme?
I'm going to Acme.
Acme,
yeah.
Comedy Company. It will be over. But I bet you if you go to kurtbrownoller.com, you can see all of your tour dates.
If I get updating them.
Right. If they are updated, otherwise just find them on Instagram. He'll probably
mention Instagram. Everything's listed on Instagram.
There you
That's
go.
A better, always better, right?
Right. So, but I did interrupt. So you think to yourself, well, I am a parent. I have a career. I don't have time to surf.
But I do realize when I think back on it, it was September of not this year, but last year, I surfed two great days. And I'm trying to piece it together. You'll be my therapist for this.
Okay.
I surfed two great days. I surfed once at down at Old Man's in San Onofre. And then it was so good, I surfed the next day at Staircases and up near Ventura. And I had I think two of the best days of surfing I've had in years.
Right.
But before I was going into the second session, I stepped backwards over what I thought was like a small wall, but the ground on the other side of the wall was much lower than where I expected it to be. And so I just landed a little weird and I tweaked my back, and then I had a back injury after that day of surfing.
Ooh.
So I didn't surf then for a year. I didn't surf for a year after that.
Right.
And my back injury went away after a couple months. So I could have gone back out there, but mm-hmm. something was preventing me from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just getting like, I'm not as in shape as I used to be. And so when I do go out, it's more difficult. I'm getting older.
Right. It's a bit of a wrestling match to get back out there.
And I can't surf as well as I used to. And so I'm dealing kind of with a depression around it, because when I have, and it also takes like, for the places that I like to go surfing, it takes like, it's going to be a 4-hour at least kind of expedition.
Right. You're
takes
out an hour for and half a day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a half a day, you know, expenditure of time.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to get that kind of like nature time that surfing really is, I live 20 minutes from the mountains. And so I just go up into the mountains and I go on a huge hike by myself, and I'm back earlier than I would be back from surfing. And I've gotten a workout and I've spent time in nature and I've kind of like centered myself.
Okay.
And so that's what I've ended up doing instead of going surfing, but surfing is how I define myself in my mind.
Right.
And so kind of struggling with that. And it's about just not being, it's about getting older and not being as in good shape as I used to be. So I'm trying to get in better shape and go surfing more often.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just struggling with it.
Right. Well, it's so hard. I got a bad sprained ankle a couple of years ago, and you could even call it working out. I was at a gym, and I sprained my ankle, and it was bad. It took almost, oof, I think, 6 months, 4 to 6 months to actually, I wore the boot for over 2 months.
That's the worst.
It was a sprain worse than a break sometimes. And, to this day, I don't go by that house. Cause I mean, I would love to, if it were a good story, you would have heard it. It was not, I literally fell off a curb with the dog.
And the curb, man. So many of my friends have done it with a curb.
The curb. And the dog, of course, just staring at me. Are we walking? We're not walking. Why aren't we walking? And the house I fell in front of, the woman saw me fall, ran into the house.
Ran into the house?
Yeah, yeah. And the gardener next door, who was working on the house next door, came over and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I don't think I am." And he goes, and he grabbed my foot. And he was like a Guatemalan guy. And he grabbed my foot and he started like moving it and going, It's just sprained, but you gotta, and then he puts it back down. And he's like, "You gotta remember to do this exercise." And I was like, "I take it you were a chiropractor in another country and are now forced to cut lawns." I was like, "I'm just gonna go to the urgent care. I'm good."
Yeah.
But I haven't been back. I haven't been back to the gym, and I have a credit with this, it's almost a physical therapist workout person too. Pilates, which I have historically made fun of, turns out is the greatest slow-mo workout in the world and keeps you bendy and flexible.
Yeah, I just started today.
Oh, Pilates.
I just started Pilates today.
Does your Pilates place have a picture of that crazy circus-looking dude, Mr. Pilates?
Johnny Pilates.
Yeah, Johnny Pilates. Mr. John Pilates, Johnny Pilates.
Why he didn't go by Johnny, I have no idea.
Me neither. And why he's wearing a swimsuit. And it's almost like, you know, the Queen of England having her poster up everywhere, or picture at the post office. Yeah. But it is really good if you could get a good Pilates instructor who will teach you how to hold your body and be in it. It's really actually quite... there's less pain.
Yeah, it is a fascinating, it's a much different way, because I also blew out both knees during the pandemic running.
Ooh.
And so I went back finally to like the place I used to go to, which was this Orange Theory Fitness place. And I just can't do it anymore because of my knees. So it's like, it's all of these like, you're becoming an old man. And so I've just given into it, just like, all right, I'm going to go do Pilates because I need to get strong again.
Right. And that's what it does. You're helping me, actually, quite honestly, because I should go back to it as well, because I have a giant credit with this woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I prepaid for a bunch of sessions. But it's been probably 2 years, and she would be completely within her rights to say, guess what, I've expired. she was a good sport about it, but did you ever skateboard?
Yeah, I grew up skateboarding, but I was never like, again, the same kind of thing, never big trick guy, you know. I'm also a very tall person,
right?
And I was very uncoordinated as a child.
Okay.
And so like I could ollie and that was it. But I much prefer just like going skateboarding.
Right. And the big board on the ocean, if you were awkward as a child to be able to be that graceful.
It feels very nice. Yeah. Yeah.
It's gotta feel great. Cause it's gotta feel like I can do this. I can look.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, there's no air, and but who cares?
It's interesting, the fact that it's like the only thing you could do on planet Earth where like you're riding pure energy, and it's And the thing that you're riding is constantly evolving and changing as you ride it. That like the playground itself changes is fascinating. And I think, you know, where the kind of like, it's why people get so weirdly cosmic about surfing, I think.
Right. What about, did you ever try windsurfing?
I didn't. I have, I did windsurfing when I was like a kid, and it's so much of windsurfing is just about like upper body strength. It's just like holding that goddamn sail.
Right.
It was like, oh, this is so hard and exhausting. But my buddy is a kite surfer, and he's like, it's not like that for kite surfing.
What is kite surfing? I have not seen that, or I have, and I don't know the difference.
You probably have. You just don't. It's literally like it looks like a big kind of parachute that they have. That's literally on a rope that goes far out in front of them.
Oh, okay.
And their board is strapped onto their feet in the same way that like a windsurfing board is strapped onto their feet. But then you have a harness on you that the kite is attached to.
Okay.
And so that's kite surfing. So people go out when it's, you know, very windy out. And they're essentially like going in one direction, then they turn and they go the other direction, that sort of thing.
Right. It's just riding. You're riding the wind, kind
right,
of.
Exactly.
And, but it's not as hard on the arms, he says?
He said no, because it's attached to a harness that you're wearing.
Okay.
So you're using your arms literally to like, if you want to like do an air and stuff like that, I think you pull it in and you kind of like it can jump a little bit and go into the air.
Okay. Yeah. And so... I mean, do you like to swim in general? Do you enjoy?
I do.
Okay. So
I do. I got my scuba diving certification when I was 10.
Wow.
Which is illegal, straight up illegal.
Straight up not cool. They're not going to let you do that.
And they just were like, you look older.
you're very tall.
Yeah.
How old do you have to be to get your scuba diving?
14.
Okay.
Yeah. At least then for Patty. And then I dove a lot. I dove a lot until I was 18.
Okay.
I loved scuba diving, and I stopped scuba diving because one, it's expensive, and two, I'm the only one who scuba dives that I know. And so I would always have to go out on these like dive trips and then be assigned some random fucking person that I would be my dive buddy.
Yeah, because you can't dive alone. I've seen enough murder mystery shows to know that you don't want to dive alone.
But I was really, really into it. Like, I got my wreck diving certification so I could dive wrecks, and I got my search and rescue certification.
Oh, wow.
All before I was 18. It was like my thing. And so, yeah, I love the ocean. I love the water. I'm a Pisces.
Okay. Kurt Braunohler is a Pisces, you guys. So
put it down. Put it in your book. I'm an artist, guys.
I'm a Cancer. Does anyone need anything? the crazy thing about now, I've done windsurfing once.
Uh-huh.
And it did, I spent an hour just it being ripped out of my arms, me climbing
so
back up.
Hard,
it being
yeah.
ripped out of my arms. And then I snorkeled a little bit in Australia. I did a bunch of snorkeling. And then Andy and I went idiot scuba diving once in the Whitsundays, where you go with a bunch of, there's no training.
Oh, wow.
And there's just a guy with the eight of you. And I was like, and so when we were sitting in a circle and he was talking to us and we all had our wetsuits on, I said, is there somebody that you usually stick close to? And he goes, yeah.
And you, the person who asked that question.
I think it must have been because he totally stuck close to me. And Andy got to go around a little bit more and see more stuff. And, yeah. But it was, you know, you go underwater and you can't, if you think about it too much, it's hard to breathe because you're like, why would I be able to breathe down here? This is where there's no air down here. And, but you have the air with you. And,
yeah.
Once I got used to being under the water, and I was ready to actually see stuff under the water. It was time to go back up. We didn't pay enough money to get to stay underwater for a long time. But I would do it again because it was interesting. It was beautiful.
I would love to do it. I would just love to do it, especially the fact that I live here. You know, I could go you know, scuba diving in Southern California would be cool. I mean, like, I got my certification in New Jersey, and we went, did like our certifying dive in the Shark River Inlet, which is, the visibility was no shit, 6 inches, right. And we just saw 500 crabs, and that was it. It was just crab after crab after crab in the murky darkness.
I think I had a friend of mine who got certified, and she had one of the tests was just in a swimming pool.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Right. You do one there, and then you have to do an open water one. For
okay.
Like the,
oh, for the yeah. second kind of real certification. And then what about this? Just, we're just going to turn this into water-based activities.
Yes.
Have you ever sailed? Do you know how to sail?
I got my sailing license when I was 14, and then never sailed a single moment again after that.
And wow, it sounds like your mom was like, you should really go to the beach, honey. And
yeah, I mean, like, my mom grew up on the beach. You know, she grew up in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Okay.
And so she loved the beach and
encouraged. Yeah.
And then the thing I think with the sailing was I was just so interested in the ocean that then it was because my mom and dad were divorced. And so then I would go up to Michigan to be with my dad. And I think one year they were just like, do you want to do this sailing certification? Like, no one we know owns a sailboat or anything like that.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, sure. I love it. Mm-hmm. And then we got to like live on a sailboat for a week or whatever. And it was fucking awesome.
That's fucking awesome.
And I can almost remember like a thing about sailing, but I have won a big sailboating competition, or I've been on the boat that won this big sailboating competition in Tasmania,
In
Australia,
yeah,
in Hobart. I think it's called the Queen of the Bay, the Hobart Queen of the Bay competition. So there's a big race that starts in Melbourne, Australia, and then goes down around Tasmania through the South Sea, which is just like a fucking crazy, very insane part of the world. And then all the way down to the bottom part of Tasmania, which is called Hobart.
Okay.
And I was dating an Australian at the time, and her mom was a sailor. And so she was on this big race from Melbourne down, and it was a sailboat filled with all women over 65. And so they came in dead last of the big race,
okay.
Right? And then the next day after this big race, that was like a 3-day race. The next day, there's the Queen of the Bay or whatever, Queen of the Hobart, or I can't, it's Queen of the something. And it's a race that just happens in Hobart Bay.
Okay.
And it's around like, it's in a big triangle. And you're handicapped based on how you did in the race from the previous day.
Yes.
So they came in last. So they were super handicapped. And then they got us, my at the time girlfriend and me, to help out. So we were the ones like doing the thing. And it was fucking awful. It is, if you've ever been in a sailboat race, it is fucking terrible. It's just you're being screamed at all times. You have on like a survival suit because the water is Arctic cold.
Right.
And it's like the thing is always at a fucking angle like that. So water is just like trying to wash you off of this boat. And then you're just being screamed at to like crank a reel and then having to duck so that you don't get fucking knocked unconscious by this giant boom that's swinging across.
Oh my gosh.
But they won.
Right. That does not sound fun. That sounds like why I never worked in like a fancy kitchen. I don't want to be screamed at. It's like you're chopping the carrots wrong and do it faster. And yes, I know. But I've gone on like sailboats where you can, you know, charter, you're part of a like,
sounds great.
Yeah, where you get to just sit around and then eventually someone hands you a bologna sandwich. Like they're always like, we're providing lunch. And then it's chicken salad, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, thank you. And the fanciest time, I don't know why I've hijacked your episode, but here it is.
Please.
The funnest one was a sailboat, 2-masted sailboat that left Cape Cod, Provincetown, Massachusetts. And it was just sail for a day. and it was in October. So it was cold. It started raining. And we got to see dolphins and whales. And then we turned around and came back, but it was pouring and it was hilarious. And I went with this just this stranger that I ended up having to share an apartment with because I was saving up money to go to Europe. It was right after college, right? So we each drank like a bottle of wine. And and we're like, it's cold. And glug, glug. And so, that, yes, hypothermia. And then, but it was really cool because it was like you felt kind of tough. And because you're on it, there was nowhere to go underneath. So it's raining like hell. The crew is jumping around like, you know, they do when they have all these big sales that they have to deal with. Yeah. And but you could just sort of, you know, pretend you're Errol Flynn and be on the board. You know, you're half of the bag looking at dolphins.
That sounds great. I love it.
Oh, God. It was one of my favorite experiences. and it was dumb. But I loved it. So. All right. Well, I am talking with Kurt Braunohler, and he has a new special out called PerfectlyStupid.com. He's a great comic. December 16th, it's going to be on YouTube and everywhere. It is right now streaming Amazon, all the places, probably Roku. Might be on Tubi. You don't know. Check it out.
You don't know. Got to check it. Maybe it's on Vudu.
It could be. Why don't you Google the words perfectly stupid and streaming? And because things will come up and you'll be like, oh, interesting. But other than that, what else? What would you say about surfing? Is there anything? So you park your car and you have you ever been attacked by sharks?
Nope. And sharks are always there. That's the one thing that we were talking about this on Bananas the other day. My podcast, Bananas.
That's right. I've been on Bananas, and Kurt has a podcast called Bananas.
The fact that sharks are at all times in the ocean, right? And they are close to the beach at all times. And the fact that there is so few shark attacks should make you feel so good. Because they are always, always, always there. And they never touch you.
Right. They don't
They don't care about you. And I find that to be comforting.
It is comforting. You just want to yell, Alan, don't be scared. It's not about you.
For people who are afraid of sharks, it seems silly to me. It's like being afraid of getting struck by lightning.
Yeah, it's enormously rare. I will say that my favorite joke that I heard someone tell, we're going to quote it, but we're also going to credit it. It's Dennis Regan. Dennis Regan, stand-up comic, very funny guy, from Florida, much like his brother, Brian Regan. They're both from Florida.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Brian Regan's brother is a stand-up?
Yeah, Dennis Regan.
Holy shit, that's got to be tough.
And his joke is that he was swimming off the coast of Florida and he saw a shark and he goes, so I'm going swimming and I see a shark. There's no music. That's the whole joke. And I was like, that is a perfectly formed joke, my friend. Well played.
I have seen a shark jump out of the water very close to me while surfing. Like, you know, hit a fish and jump.
Right.
Like
that feels like a lot.
The only time that I've ever gotten spooked in the water was I was visiting Australia and my brother rented like us a camper van. And so we drove up the coast from Sydney all the way up to the Gold Coast to Byron Bay there. And Byron Bay was all blown out and there was no surf. And so right on the other side around the point of Byron Bay is this other beach that's like probably just, I don't know, 10 miles of beach and it's very wild. And we slept in the parking lot of that beach. But then you have to like walk through what they call the bush, we would call the woods, to then get to this beach where you're like all alone. So I woke up early. My brother was still asleep. And I walked through the bush with my surfboard and went out on this beach where I am the only human being for no shit like 10 miles.
Right.
And it's a very wild feeling. And it was the conditions were not great.
And you probably shouldn't surf alone either, right?
I surf alone all the time.
Okay. What if you get clocked in the head by your surfboard because it's attached to your ankle?
I don't know. I've been surfing for 30 years and I've never been clocked in my head by my surfboard.
That's what I always think whenever I see the surfboard go one way and their legs go the other way, I'm like, oh, don't come back and clock them. Anyway, so
there's a lot of ocean and the surfboard's very small in comparison.
Okay, fair enough. but super wild, 10 miles.
So super wild and very windy. So it was very choppy out there. I don't even know why I was out there. It was like I was going to go surfing because I was in Australia, even though the conditions weren't good. And it just felt, I just got spooked. And I just was like, there was a lot of water moving around. And I just got a sharky vibe. And then all of a sudden around me, a pod of dolphin just popped up on either side of me and scared the shit out of me. Literally like five dolphin all breached at the same time and took a breath and then went back under. And I think it was like screamed out loud. And then I was like, all right, I'm a little on edge. And I also realized if anything happened, my brother's asleep. There's no one on this beach. Like I just bleed out on this beach if something happened.
You would get washed up miles down.
Yeah.
And,
so I
and
paddled
people
in.
Would be sad. Yes.
And then I had this book of Australian surfing. And it was made in the 70s. And I looked up that spot in the book after I had come out of the water. And a very famous pro surfer had been attacked and killed by a shark right where I was. And so my feeling was accurate that it's a very sharky spot.
It feels super sharky. That is a great story to end on, Kurt. Thank you so much. This has been an hour. Or it looks like an hour. I'm probably wrong. I forget to write things down.
59 minutes.
It'll do. It'll do, my friends. And because it was it's a great story. And I like that they were dolphins. Yeah. I've never wanted to swim with dolphins. I always feel like I'm interrupting something. And I think I am. It's called their lives. Yeah. They're busy trying to get laid by other dolphins, I assume.
Yeah, they want to fuck.
They want to fuck. They want to eat the fishes that they eat. They got lives to lead. Okay, so Kurt Braunohler has been our guest. He has a podcast called Bananas. He has a special called Perfectly Stupid Doc. And if you go to perfectlystupid.com, you can find all the places to watch it. It's going to be on YouTube on the 16th of December. And just follow him on Instagram at Kurt Braunohler, which will be in the link, be in the notes, to find out where he's doing stand-up next, because super funny. Thank you for doing the show.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?